Each week, nearly a dozen movies are released theatrically. 40 films a month, more than 400 a year. That's a plethora of cinema. Too much cinema. You'd have to be an addict to see all that, but don't fret. We've got you covered. This is Cinematics.
Hey everyone, what's up? It's a new week of Cinematics. Cinematics episode 241. This time we are covering movies that are coming out on Friday, May 10th, either in theaters, on digital, on demand, hopefully both. And our weekly job is to find cinematic gems for you guys to watch on the weekend. Usually, yeah, I think we have a pretty much nine out of 10, Bruce Perky, co-host Bruce Perky. What do you think? 9 out of 10 we find gems or a little bit of lesser? What do you think? The guesstimate
nine out of 10 episodes is what you're asking?
Yeah, I mean, 9 out of 10 times we find gems. If some really good ones, or do we ever have stinker weeks? Yeah?
Stinker weeks.
Where
we should have something specifically called a stinker week. We just watch stinkers.
Stink.
I mean, we have some weeks where it's like, nothing's really amazing, but we have some, you know, solid choices and some maybe that aren't. But most weeks we find at least one hidden gem, I would say.
And that one hidden gem this week, Bruce Perky, you want to say it right now? What's that one hidden gem in this week that we're going to cover?
Lost Boys? I don't know.
I was going to say The Last Stop in Yuma County. That's one of the movies we're covering this week. We're also covering Force of Nature, The Dry 2. And Bruce Perky was saying this, they should just call this movie The Wet, because The Dry, the original movie, The Dry, starring Eric Bana, was set in a very just arid desert. No water in The Dry. That's why it was called The Dry. But this one, for Force of Nature, the sequel, in The Dry 2, we have Eric Bana in more of a lush, foresty, wet area. So we'll see if that sequel lives up to the original movie, The Dry. We're also covering a movie called The Image of You, a thriller that Eric Holmes did the interviews and saw the movie. And he was actually, who knows? I think he was intrigued by the story, and we'll get to that in a second on why he might have been intrigued. Finally, I will cover this movie called Lazarus, which stars Ashley Judd. She of the awesome movie, what, Eric Holmes? What's that awesome movie that you and Bruce Perky love so much from Ashley Judd? If you do not
Ashley
know
Judd?
Bruce Perky, yes. You do not know.
I mean, let's see. There's Heat. There's the one where she's in Walmart with the Queen Amidala.
Okay.
Was it Heart of the Heart?
Was she in that movie?
Yeah, I like that one.
Okay.
I think so.
Are you sure? That's not Susan Sarandon? Oh, well, maybe you're right. I could be wrong. Where the Heart Is? I'm going to look it up right now. Bruce, what's the movie that you and Eric have talked about over the last several years?
I mean, it's got to be Double Indemnity, I'm sure. That's the one, right? Or whatever that movie's called.
The movie you're thinking of is Double Jeopardy. Come on,
that
guys.
That one's so terrible.
What's that Ashley Judd movie that you both love? You know it.
I don't know. It's going to bug me. I can't quite think of it.
Okay. You know, Bruce, you being so smart, it's going to bug you. Yes.
Was it Dolphin Tale 2?
Right. No. Like Bruce said, it is Bruce the smart aleck.
Oh, bug.
Yes, Bruce. Yeah. It's going to bug him. Bug. Directed by William Friedkin. Starring, I believe, who? Harry Connick Jr. maybe? And then Ashley Judd. Was Harry Connick in that? No. It was Ashley Judd and Michael Shannon, correct?
And Harry Connick Jr.
Really? He was in that. I just remember the two of them in the room the whole time.
Yeah, he's the a-hole. Either I forget if it's ex-husband or boyfriend, but he's the a-hole of former partner of her.
Okay, now I'm completely confused because Eric Holmes mentioned Dolphin Tale, and I thought I have a
Dolphin
feeling that
Tale Ashley, 2, Tale the 2. Lundgren.
Right, Dolphin Tale 2. Wasn't Ashley Judd in one of the Dolphin Tales along with Harry Connick? Anyways, Bug is the movie we're referencing. Ashley's in a new movie called Lazarus. I have no idea what we're talking about. I'm not going to question Eric Holmes. What's that whale movie again? A Whale Tale? What is it?
Free Willy?
Free Willy. Okay. Bruce and Eric continue to confound and confuse me. These are the movies we're covering. What we are not covering this week are the big movies, quote unquote, the big movies that will be playing at your local Cineplex. They are Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, the horror thriller Tarot, and also sort of an indie film, but it's a big star. Chris Pine directs and co-writes and stars in this movie called Pool Man, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, Tarot, and Pool Man. Eric Holmes, Bruce Perky, will either of you be going to the theaters to watch any of these movies this weekend?
I will be watching Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. I think the original Apes movies are all pretty good, or at least the ones I've seen. The new one, The Rise, Dawn, and War are all really good. I think that's like probably one of the best trilogies ever. I'm kind of nervous about it because it's like kind of like when they came out with Toy Story 4. It's like, yeah, you stuck the landing on the third one. Why do a fourth
So
one?
good.
But the
Why?
fourth one ended up being pretty good. So I'm hoping for good things. And early reviews on it seem to be that this one's pretty good too. So looking forward to it.
Well, I know Bruce Perky has to go see Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. You know why, Bruce Perky? Do you have any idea why you might see it with one of your sons or maybe by yourself if you
Ashley
spend the
Judd's
money?
in
Yeah. Don't confuse me, Eric.
I
I
have
love
no
it.
clue. I
Very
have
good.
no clue.
You have a clue. You just don't want to. The lead actress is Freya Allen. Freya Allen, who you and I know very well from this horror thriller several weeks ago called Baghead. Remember that movie,
Oh, yes.
Baghead? Remember
I
Baghead?
remember that. I remember that we watched it. I remember that much.
Remember the bag over someone's head? It's in the basement of a pub. The
Oh,
pub's
boy.
the little pub. It happens to be in this really huge, sort of big warehouse. And it was it scary? Was it amazing, Baghead? Do you remember that movie? Anything?
It was truth in advertising. There was a creature with a bag on its head, and it
Right.
happened.
We'll see. I bet you Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes will be a very good movie. We'll see. Eric Holmes might actually talk to Bruce Perky next week when they record episode 242 next week for Cinematics. I won't be here. I will be out of town. So hopefully you won't get my verbiage and it'll be a
I
Bruce
think
Perky.
this
Yes,
is
sir.
the
And
week for
Bruce.
us to unleash a soundboard. We need to figure out a soundboard of just all Greg.
Very,
Oh,
very good. And then, yes, Eric Holmes.
I don't think this is breaking news. It's out there, but apparently the guy that did Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is doing a Legend of Zelda movie. So not really got high hopes. Please be good, because I want a
Okay.
Zelda movie to be good.
So tell us what you think of Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes next week here in our Cinematics universe. Hit up Bruce or Eric or me. Tell us what you think of the movie. Eric Holmes will share his mini review with Bruce Perky next week. Eric Holmes, by next week, will also put up a poll on our Cinematics Facebook group. I will put up a poll on our Patreon group as well for the May episode. Eric, what is the first movie that we're going to watch? What is your choice for this month? Do you remember?
I believe it was Maniac. It was between
No.
Maniac and another one.
And it was Outland. You picked Outland as
Oh,
your
okay.
movie.
Yeah, because one of them wasn't the exact date. So, yeah,
Right. Because Maniac was 1980, Outland is 1981.
yeah,
So
so.
Eric's pick is Outland, and he will post up on our Cinematics Facebook group shortly to see which movie should be from 1981. Again, the second pick will be a Patreon member pick or a Patreon member slash Cinematics Facebook group
I
member
would
pick.
point out, though, if you haven't seen Maniac, just watch it because it's a good
Yes.
movie.
All right. Yeah, I still haven't seen Maniac. Bruce, do you agree? Good movie, Maniac. It's been out.
It's one of those makes you feel kind of gross, but it's done well kind of movies from that time period. And the
They had
remake
the,
is surprisingly good.
yeah, I was just going to mention that the remake with Frodo.
Frodo,
I
Ethan
can't
Hawke,
remember name.
Ethan Hawke.
Nah, not
Oh,
Ethan
no.
Hawke.
Ethan
The
Wood,
Oh my God, this
Evan
whole
Rachel
episode
Wood.
is like old
Evan Rachel
people trying to
Wood.
remember things.
Elijah Wood.
Elijah
Jesus.
Wood.
Guys, we're getting old. This is not working for us. We're
I
getting
want to see the Ethan Hawke version of Lord of the Rings. Where is that one, you know? It's
old.
like
How old are we getting? Well, I'll tell you how old we're getting. Eric Holmes, who did you just interview with, what, 10 minutes ago? Who did you interview?
Well, did a couple inter did some interviews for Darkness of Man, Jean-Claude Van Damme movie. I got to interview Sticky Fingers, which was awesome, but man, I could not keep up. That thing was chaotic. I don't know if you watched that yet, Greg, but
I'm not yet.
you got some Scissor Hands to do with that
Okay,
one.
very scissor hands. I like
I
that.
also direct interviewed the director James Bresak, and I
For
just like
Darkness of Man.
finished an interview with Christina Loken. Did not know. Well, watching the movie, it's in the interview, but I did not know that she played TX in Terminator 3. So yeah, I got to admit to her how big of an idiot I was, and she thought that was kind of funny.
Here's an interviewing tip. I'll tell you, telling the talent that you're interviewing that you're an idiot from the initial foray and the initial conversation puts them at ease. So I don't have to
Well.
tell them. They just take one look at me and they automatically assume. So they're at ease anyway. Oh, he's not so smart. Yes, Eric Holmes.
One thing I really wanted to ask her about, because she got, I don't know if she air quote won a Razzie or was nominated for a Razzie for Blood Rain. I kind of wanted to talk to her about that just because I hate the Razzies and kind of want to give her a platform to just talk crap on him.
Oh.
But I think towards the end of the interview, like I could have got away with asking her that, and she probably would have been fine with it. But then at that point, it's like this thing's probably going to go on for a half hour if I do that, so I best not. So that was my only like. I wish I would ask the question, but when you ask stuff like that, you kind of got to be a surgeon when doing that because it could
Yes.
go wrong real quick if you don't do it right.
Very smart, Eric. Do you ever watch my old interviews, Eric, for some inspiration and insight on how to be a great interviewer? I know Bruce Berkey, when he was doing interviews, when he had a little bit of sliver of time, he would always look up to me and ask me for advice in the middle of the night, right? Right, Bruce? Did you genuinely reflect to my interviewing skills? Was that correct? Or am I lying? What do you say,
Get
Bruce?
that text in the middle of the night. Greg, help me, help me.
I do watch him, Greg, and then
Yes.
when I watch him, I'm like, I picked up none of this. I need to get
Yes.
better.
No, you know what you need to do is watch my interviews and do exactly the opposite. That will make you a very brilliant interviewer.
Look, Greg, I
So,
know you're self-deprecating, but
no.
I hard disagree with everything you just said about
Okay.
that. You're awesome at what you do.
Thank you so much, but never put my name next to the word hard. It doesn't make sense. Those two, right, Bruce? You like that? I finally got a rim shot. Okay, let's be serious. Thank you, Eric Holmes. Let's get to our featured movie this week. Featured because, spoiler alert, this might be our gem of the week. I don't know. Bruce and Eric might disagree. We'll see. The Last Stop in Yuma County.
So I'll
I've
just
been
put
speaking for
fives
about
on
10
all of
minutes.
ours, but go ahead.
Very, very good. Bruce, can you do me the honors and talk about the plot line? And
I will, but tell me, I think should I give it to the point of the basic conflict and kind of leave it at that?
I would say whatever you're comfortable with, just go with your instinct on
All
that,
right.
because we need more of your beautiful voice into this podcast right now.
So this takes place in the 70s sometime, we're not sure when, and you've got Jim Cummings as a knife salesman pulling up to this desolate gas station that's kind of attached to a desolate diner. Apparently it's the last stop in Yuma County. And when he gets there, he immediately finds out we're out of gas. The truck hasn't shown up yet. We don't have any gas for you. And he's like, well, I'm almost out of gas. What am I going to do? He's like, well, you're going to have to go wait at the diner. Should be here any minute now. Just hang out at the diner, Mr. Cummings, whatever his name is in the movie. I don't remember. Mr. Cummings, hang out at the diner. And he's like, all right, okay. And he goes and hangs out in the diner. While he does that, or while he's getting out of his car, you're hearing, radio stuff going on. And in the radio commercial, or not commercial, but news little blurb, you hear that there was a recent bank robbery. And keep a lookout for a Pinto with a dented back bumper. And while he's sitting there and he's talking to the woman who's the lone worker apparently at this diner, and there's a lone worker played by Faison Love at the gas station. While he's sitting there and he's kind of getting the lay of the land, guess what pulls up? A Pinto with a dented back bumper. And thus begins the tension. Now, we've talked about the bomb under the table, right? This one essentially is a whole movie. So this is two Hitchcock movies in one. It's the bomb under the table movie because essentially you have the occupants of this Pinto, who are obvious bad guys. They're going to be in this diner as well. And then you have various people running out of gas as the movie goes on. Just adding more people to the diner from the birds, essentially. And that's the basic setup. And I won't say too much because I really want to hear your guys' opinion of it. But there's great style. There's tons of great characters. And I'm sure you're going to name all the actors, a lot of the actors that you'll recognize in this movie. And each one of them has a moment to shine. Simple concept. Simple stakes, but not a simple, like, how is it going to wrap up? Because basically, as every new complication arrives, you're trying to figure out how is this movie going to end? What's going to happen? I love this movie. I love it, love it, love it. It's this fantastic, simple storytelling. It's just great.
Yeah, the two bad people that Bruce Berkey referenced—they actually the plot summary mentions what these two bad people do, but we're gonna just leave that out there. We're just gonna assume. Well, we'll just leave it to Bruce's explanation of the plot, which I think is really good. These two bad people are played by Richard Brake and Nicholas Logan. Eric Holmes mentioned these actors' names in his interview with writer-director Francis Galuppi, so you can check that out on our Cinematics YouTube channel for that. It's a really good interview with Francis. Movie also stars Jocelyn Donahue as the aforementioned waitress and sole employee currently, at that diner. There's also Sierra McCormick. You might know her from The Vast of Night, and Michael Abbott Jr., who I believe, did he star? I could be wrong on that.
Death of Dick Long.
Death of Dick Long. Very good. Thank you, Eric Holmes. Faison Love, like Bruce Perky was mentioned, Faison Love is fantastic in this movie. Barbara Crampton, very good. I'm not going to say not much to do, but what she has to do is pretty cool too. So I think this is a really great movie, but great ensemble, really well done. I think we're going to get to Eric's review in a second, but I will say what I really loved about The Last Stop in Yuma County is Bruce Perky specifically mentioned it's two Hitchcock films in one. That is a clue to the movie that without spoiling what the movie is going to bring. I will also add to that, that this type of film you may have seen 100 times before, but there is the way it's executed, especially in dealing with the characters, is very well done and very unexpected. And I think ultimately quite just surprising, makes me want to watch it again. And I think Eric's already seen it twice. He probably has a better perspective than me and Bruce because he's seen it twice. Eric, your thoughts on this film?
Well, first of all, you were asking what Jim Cummings' character's name is. I'm looking on IMDb. He's the top billed person on IMDb, and his name is the Knife Salesman, but everyone else has actual names. That's kind of weird. I love the hell out of this movie, and it was just kind of like Bruce said, a potboiler, like the bomb under the table, just waiting to. We know it's going to go off. It's just a matter of how. I don't know. I don't think this is a spoiler because it happened during the opening credits, but I will say that didn't connect with me until I watched it the second time. And I knew basically why the fuel truck hasn't shown. They tell you right off the bat during the opening credits and it didn't even dawn on me. And then I get to the end of the movie and go watch it again. I'm like, oh, duh.
Right. Yes.
It's right there. And there are so many small details. Like, this movie has like high rewatchability to it because, like, even though the story, like the characters are all great and the story seems pretty basic but done well, but there are so many tiny details in it that, like, if you go back and watch it again, you start picking up little things that you miss along the way. And it's just incredibly fun, very tense. And certain things happen in this that let you know that anything could happen.
100%.
We'll just kind of leave it there.
100%. Yes. Very good, Eric.
But very good. This thing's fantastic. If you can see it in theaters, definitely would watch it in theaters. I can imagine this doing. I could imagine watching this with a crowd, and it would be even better, like in that kind of environment, because it's got kind of that sort of energy to it. Yeah. Let me think of the things I don't like about it.
Right.
It ended. I didn't like that.
Right. Again, this is his first movie, Francis Galluppi, his debut feature. Okay, so this is a calling card movie for him.
And oh, yeah.
We also have to mention one thing that all three of us in our mini reviews are missing. This movie is violent. There is violence that occurs. That's not a spoiler. It's also very funny. It's also very, very funny. Very hard to do. Only filmmakers, I'm thinking like the Coen brothers, can pull that off, where you have something where it's a potboiler, like Eric was saying, but then there is a lot of comedy within all that tense violence and the inevitability of sadness that might come about. There's still a lot of comedy, which is hard to pull off, and they pull it off very well in this movie. I don't know, Bruce, final thoughts and ratings? The Last Stop in Yuma County. Sorry, Bruce. Go ahead.
First of all, Coen Brothers adjacent. That's great. Great thing to bring up. One thing I want to bring up. So everything, we all agree. I think this is just crackerjack entertainment. Great suspense. Great. Like you said, there's sly comedy. I would also contend if you want to see it, you don't have to. It doesn't even need to be there. But if you want to see it, I would also contend to me, this is a better depiction of what America is all about than Civil War. Think about it. Just leave it at that. When we get to the spoilers, I'll kind of get what I'm talking about. There are some pretty great stuff here. Also, I would say this may be the best use of the actual original recording of Roy Orbison's crying, which is saying a lot. It's pretty fantastic.
And I think one of the opening tracks is, I forgot the name of the track. It's My Love is Blue, Blue, My Love is Blue. I think that's the, I used to love that song all the time back in the day. So some really great use of music in this movie.
Yeah.
Yes, Bruce.
Oh, 5 stars.
Five stars. Okay.
Or leaning towards classic.
Okay. 5 stars leaning towards classic. I don't have an original thought in my head. I'm just gonna echo what Bruce Berkey says. 5 stars for me. Perfect film. I think I will definitely watch it again. Just highest marks for me for The Last Stop in Yuma County, Eric Holmes.
Well, first of all, I also want to point out that the cast is used great in this. Like Jim
Yes.
Cummings is being the Jim Cummings character you go there to see. Richard Brake is being the creepy snake that you love watching him as. Faizan Love is like the warm, kind of funny guy that you want him to be. Like everyone cast in this is like the perfect version of what they're, and I don't know, I want to say what they are, but like kind of what you expect from these actors. And these are like just the casting's brilliant in this, and the way that they're used in this is like it's Jim Cummings, Richard Brake, Faizan Love. Like this is exactly what I want from them. And it's just, yeah, this thing's great.
Yeah, we
And
also have to mention Jocelyn Donahue, who is pretty much the de facto lead in the film, and she's very, very good. And everyone's great, but
yeah.
she's good as the waitress because she has to be the anchor when all of this stuff is going down too. So.
Yeah, we'll talk more about her later. I would say any fans of like if you watch Dust Till Dawn and you love the first half of Dust Till Dawn, this is kind of that. If you watch Jon Moskow's Breakdown with Kurt Russell, this is kind of that. Roadhouse 66, like those kind of movies, like stuck in the middle of nowhere, Midwest sort of type movies. Yeah, this is fantastic. This is 6.9. It cannot go any lower than 6.9. In
Six point.
fact, I wish it could have went higher because on second watch, I loved it even more. And I think this is just one of those movies. Like, I think you would watch it once and love it, and then you watch it again and then again and again. I imagine watching this like the 20th time. I'm like, just I could watch this movie every day.
Eric Holmes's favorite film of 2024 is currently The Last Stop in Yuma County. Am I overreaching there, Eric Holmes? If you can
I
look.
mean, Mayhem's really good. So I'd like
Yes.
the two are like neck and neck, I think.
Yes. Wait, Bruce, I forget. Did you like Mayhem as well? You may like Mayhem,
I did
correct?
like Mayhem quite a bit,
Yes.
yes.
That, yeah. How come more people have not seen Mayhem, folks? That's a movie that we need to bring up more. Mayhem. We love that movie so.
Hundreds of beavers.
Hundreds of. Oh, yeah. Hundreds. Okay. Very good, Eric Holmes. See, you
Yeah.
have a very, very good memory. So, again,
No, I don't, but I remember those.
in theaters and digital on May 10th. That is The Last Stop in Yuma County. Tell us what you think of this movie. Is Force of Nature the Dry 2? Does it reach the heights of The Last Stop in Yuma County? First off, I did a rewatch of The Dry. Love that film so much. And then I did a back, so back to back. After watching The Dry, then I watched Force of Nature, The Dry 2. So I can't wait to hear what Bruce Berkey, who's also seen this movie, thinks about this film. Here's the plot summary. After receiving a distressing call from an informant, federal agents Aaron Falk and Carmen Cooper head to the Girilong Ranges to investigate the whereabouts of their whistleblower slash informant. That person is Alice. She is played by Anna Torv. So what happens with Alice is she's going to leak some really important information for this big corporation she's working for. She has a reason for being a whistleblower. She goes on a company retreat in the middle of this Girilong Ranges. They get lost, and a lot of she's with maybe four or five other women, fellow coworkers, and they get lost in the middle of the forest. It's really beautiful to look at when you're not in that area, but it's dangerous when you're out there all alone with no one to actually guide you. So a big part of the movie is a flashback on Alice's adventures and trials with her coworkers in the middle of the forest. And the present day, you see federal agents Aaron Falk and Carmen Cooper trying to figure out what's going on in the forest. Now, Carmen Cooper, she has, played by Jacqueline McKenzie, she has a supporting role in this film. She's good in this, but it's mainly told from the POV of the whistleblower, Anna Torv, with the flashbacks. But mainly, this is an Aaron Falk movie. Aaron Falk is played by Eric Bana. Aaron Falk was the lawman at the beginning of The Dry, and The Dry had a lot of flashbacks, and it dealt with how he is trying, how the memories of his past affected his investigation of the present. Same aesthetic with this one. With Aaron Falk, he actually has a connection to this forest area because he had an experience, very tragic experience, years back with his parents in the same area. So if you enjoy The Dry, where you see a lot of flashbacks and then it goes into the present, and you like that aesthetic, and you like Eric Bana as Aaron Falk, I think this is a very good follow-up. Not as great as The Dry, because Bruce, I don't know if you remember The Dry, you remember portions of The Dry. The Dry to me is like a 4.5-star film, close to perfect. It's one of these movies that I hope down the line I'm going to get on Blu-ray. I definitely want to get Force of Nature, The Dry 2 on Blu-ray as well. The only thing is, this movie is more of Falk investigating these people. The first one is Falk pretty much kind of front and center. There is an investigation, but you get to see more of his life. But yeah, this one's still a very, very good movie. I highly recommend it if you are a fan of The Dry. These are based on the novels by Jane Harper. She is a co-writer in this film with director Robert Connolly. Connolly also directed The Dry. Bruce Berkey, your thoughts on Force of Nature, The Dry 2?
Yeah, I liked it enough, but I would definitely, I think you've kind of identified some of the problem here for me compared to The Dry. The Dry, I think of it like he's involved actively in investigating and figuring out what's going on and going from place to place and talking to people and figuring stuff out, right? And this one's much more of like kind of your classic whodunit, although it's a who yes. she's missing, but essentially, you know, they all go out in this retreat hike thing. All of them stumble out of the woods except for Alice. And now we have to backtrack and figure out where she's at. And essentially, Falk and his cohort, which doesn't do anything in this movie, really, pretty much. Right. Falk is pretty much like an inspector or like Jessica Fletcher or something, you know, just shows up and like, okay, let's talk to people. And then we're going to see flashbacks. So he's really mostly inert. He's mostly just hanging out at this lodge, talking to people. And then the whole story is what happens to them, which isn't terrible.
Right. In fairness, Falk as a kid gets more action in this movie because yes. You see Falk as a child going through the same forest while he is inert present day.
Yes. And it's to me, there's a loss of using his character really to great effect. I think then you kind of miss that, even though the story itself, it almost is like he almost doesn't have to be in the story. They could just make the story the story. He's there because he's kind of the connecting tissue of the series of stories. I understand that. I also would say, like Jessica Fletcher, does he have personal connections to every place he has to go and investigate something? Does that just happen to him? Like, luckily?
I think that was cool. I can understand that. I can understand that.
The next one, he's going to be out on the coast someplace and he's going to have some traumatic event from his childhood just happen to be at the same place. That was kind of, you know, a little bit ridiculous, but whatever. You know, I think people who like traditional style, mystery-ish sort of crime detective-y sort of stories, I think are going to have enough here to keep them going and keep them interested to enjoy it. If that's not really your kind of your deal, it's probably not going to move the needle much for you. Like I would say I'm a mild recommend, but it doesn't give me as much as I wanted. I want to see him doing stuff, you know, not just questioning the next person who wanders in.
Right. I will say it's not as good as The Dry. That said, I forgot to mention the Anna Torv story. I disagree with you slightly on this. I found her story to be good enough for me to engage. What happened to her? Is she alive? Is she dead? Where is this information? Will it ever get out? Is she going to succeed as a whistleblower? Who among the women are they? Do they have ulterior motives? I found the mystery to be fine, but it's just that for me, The Dry movies should be about Falk. And yeah, there's exactly. Less of Falk here. And yeah,
we kind of don't give a Falk about.
I gave more of a Falk with The Dry original film, but I still really enjoyed Force of Nature, The Dry 2. Yes, Bruce.
Did you also agree? There's this whole subplot about this possible old serial killer that used to be in the area, which is almost right. Goes nowhere.
Yes.
And you don't introduce a unsolved.
What is that called? Is that misapplied red herring? Is that or what is
maybe.
It?
Maybe. Like you have an unsolved serial killer. I mean, you can't introduce that into a crime movie and not have some kind of resolution on that.
Right. That's very interesting. Mm. Yeah. So that's a threat.
Zodiac.
Well, it's the whole point of the story. Oh. Like you don't have like a subplot.
Zodiac.
It's like having Silence of the Lambs. And Buffalo Bill's there too, but you're going to just kind of at the end just forget about Buffalo Bill. Oh, yeah, it was just gone. Yeah. Nothing happened.
Okay, so Force of Nature, The Dry 2 for me. This is a strong recommend. I enjoyed the story. I can't wait for The Dry 3. I'm fine with Bach going to certain locations and having a personal connection. It's me. Bruce is correct. I am a fan of these detective-y, whodunit-y type of movies. So for me, 4 stars for Force of Nature, The Dry 2. Yes, Bruce, your rating.
I'm probably 3 stars. I think this is more suited. This should be like limited series.
I'm
Like
not
I
going to
could
argue. I'm
see
not going to argue.
Netflix or one of them picking up a Fox series, and each season could be, 6 or 7 episodes of him solving whatever, and they could flesh these things out and really make it a lot of fun. So one situation where I prefer, I think, a season versus a movie, if they're going to make the movies like this, because I don't think they have enough time in this to really get into the meat of everything.
Okay.
So like Kolchak the Night Falker.
Yes.
All right. Very good. Here it comes. 3 stars for Bruce Perky. 4 stars for me. Again, Force of Nature, The Dry 2 in theaters and everywhere you rent movies starting May 10th. Next up is a movie called The Image of You. And here it says the movie is about a twisted tale of deception and desire based on the best-selling thriller by Adele Parks. By the way, Eric Holmes actually recently interviewed Adele Parks maybe a week or so ago. Center's identical twins, Anna and Zoe, find their bond tested over Anna's new love, Nick. While the trusting Anna is head over heels, her skeptical sister Zoe senses a web of deceit. Dun dun dun. The movie stars Sacha Pieterse. I don't know how
Patirsi,
to. I'm
I think
sorry.
it's Patirsi, I think.
Pieterse. Thank you, Eric. Sacha Pieterse, Parker Young, Nestor Carbonell, and Academy Award winner Mira Sorvino. Eric Holmes, this looks like a cheap little thriller that probably Bruce and I might say, whatever. But I think you have other thoughts about The Image of You. What are they?
I do. I think definitely a little trashy, I guess, but like it kind of works in that lane.
Oh my gosh, Eric Holmes, does that mean you're a fan of trashy stuff? Do you like
I
trashy
love
movies?
trashy stuff. I would call this like an erotic thriller. It's definitely a thriller. It doesn't go as erotic as like a 50 Shades of Grey, but it definitely has its sexy scenes for sure. Yeah, basically, Sacha Pieterse, if I'm saying the name correctly, plays twin sisters Annie and Zoe, and Anna is meets Nick, seems like a good guy, and they dating for like a very short period of time. They want to get married. And then at one point, Zoe meets Nick, and the two of them have sex. And Nick immediately
That's a
agrees.
spoiler alert, Eric. They're not the, we don't we okay.
No,
Okay, I'm
it's
kidding. I'm
not.
kidding. I'm
That's
kidding. I'm kidding.
limited.
I'm
That's
joking. I'm joking.
limited.
Go ahead.
But
Sorry, Eric.
the two of them have sex, and then it's, oh no, what did I do? And then, oh, is he going to keep up the relationship, or is Zoe going to tell Anna? And then it's that whole thing. And then it goes other places, but we'll leave that alone. But this is like kind of like talked about Au Pair Nightmare, Joe Russo
Yes,
banger
that
Au
was
Pair
cool.
Nightmare.
That was a good movie.
This kind of has a similar kind of vibe to it.
Okay. Is it elevated? Elevated trashy thriller, meaning trashy could be good sometime in.
I don't want to say elevated because I think it stays in its lane. Like elevated implies that we're doing this genre that we're too good for, therefore we need to add more spices
Zhush.
to it to,
Right.
pretty it up a bit. This
Yeah.
one just kind of it's just like Au Pair Nightmare. It like knows what it is and it stays in that lane, and it's a really good version of that thing that it's doing. So much so that once I realized who Adele Parks was when I was going to interview her, I was like, oh, this is based on a novel. Well, I want to read the novel, and now I'm reading the novel, so it's kind of hard talking about the movie because like the two kind of inform each other, kind of like how Hold the Dark did, at least for me. Like I watched Hold the Dark and I liked the movie, and then I started reading the book, and then the book had stuff that the movie did where the movie had stuff that the book didn't, so like the two like merged together in my head.
Are you enjoying the book?
Oh, I'm loving the book. In fact, it's kind of make because the book is kind of filling in gaps that the movie just doesn't have time for. So it's kind of making me retroactively like the movie even more. Because like the movies has like there's certain personal stuff that, in an hour and a half movie you just don't have time for. And so when the book gets to fill in those blanks and then you go back and watch the movie, it's like, I see the little details and the little things they wiggled in and out, and that, yeah, it's really good. That said, I think this is a movie more that this would be like just right away. This is 3-star banger, like all the way, because there's a certain group of people that this movie is going to be absolute catnip for. Like I imagine my sister would love this movie. There are other people,
Bruce Parkey, Bruce,
that are just going to watch this and be like, nope, not for me.
You know what you're saying? Bruce won't give it 5 stars. Bruce is not. No.
Probably not. But
Bruce, can you stop? Hey, are you still on that high horse you're on, Bruce? Because well, come down to Eric and start reading some trashy novels. Like hang out with him at Adele Parks, huh?
I was daydreaming about Jade and Mulholland Falls. I was
Sir Bruce Perky, we stand before thee, humble, your humble servant, cinematic god. No, I'm kidding, Bruce. Go ahead. But
this is a movie that...
Would I like it?
I think you would, because okay. Like kind of like
because De Palma, I like everything
has that kind of erotic, what? Trashy kind of streak, okay, to him that you dig, and this kind of has a similar sort of thing. And the thing is, like I set up the basic premise, it goes down other roads.
Is that the fact that it goes down other roads, Eric? Is that why you actually, even after, look, even if this was a guilty pleasure, you could have finished the movie and you have a busy day. You decided to actually go overboard and read the novel. You didn't have to do that. So is that, that's the reason why?
Well, first of all, listening to the audiobook, but I'm not quite done with it yet.
Still counts. That's
but
still counts.
I've heard that the ending of the novel is different than the movie. I'm very curious to see how the novel ends, because the weird thing is, in the movie, and I'm not going to say like even hint at what happens, but the movie goes places. And as it's going there, I'm kind of rolling my eyes going, no, stop. No, doesn't make sense. Okay. All right. Okay. You tied up that. Oh, okay. Oh, I see now. I see. You scared me for a second, but I see where, I see how all this fits together. And so I'm really curious to finish the rest of the book. And because apparently the book is like different. The ending's different than the movie. So I'm very curious to see how that goes. But yeah, if you're like a fan of like 50 Shades of Grey or like Lifetime or De Palma or like, erotic thrillers, this one's a good one. Definitely check it out. If you're not, then avoid it like the plague. But if you like this, if you do enjoy this movie, I would definitely recommend going to read the book or listen to the audiobook, because it's kind of the further I get into the book, the more it's making me love the movie in retrospect. But yeah,
for some reason, Eric Holmes has guarded the spoiler stuff of The Image of You more than any other film that he's absolutely reviewed in our Find Your Film Cinematics universe. It's like he's reviewing Fort Knox. That means he must really enjoy The Image of You. I'm going to give this movie a shot as well, because, and maybe Bruce Perky will give this movie a shot. I'm really going to give this a shot, because if Eric went novel form, I'm going for it. Yes, Eric.
I'm almost curious because I mean, the novel is a bestseller. I didn't know about it until I saw the movie. I'm very curious of if anyone read the novel, or if for anyone that hasn't seen the movie, if you read the novel or listen to the audiobook first and then go watch the movie, like I wonder what that experience is, because I'm going at it backwards and I'm loving it, but I'd be very curious to see what people going the other way think.
I'm excited to see. I'm going to give this movie a shot. Directed by Jeff Fisher, based again on the best-selling thriller by Adele Parks. That is The Image of You, Eric Holmes. You gave it again. What is your rating?
3-star banger.
3-star banger.
If you're in for this kind of movie, this is going to be catnip for you. If you are not, this is not going to win you over.
Okay. Theaters and digital on May 10th. Also available in theaters and on demand May 10th is a film that I reviewed called Lazarus. And it centers on, it's, look, we've seen this before. In the future, Earth has gone haywire. This was obviously inspired by COVID-19, right? Following the death of their parents, Lee, played by Ashley Judd, decides to adopt her two nieces, Imogen, played by Katie Douglas, and Maeve, played by Sarah Pidgeon. Maeve is the older sister. Imogen is the younger sister. So Lee, again, played by Ashley Judd, she is taking care of the nieces. They live in this section, remote section of the forest, another forest here, the outdoors, called Lazarus. They call their home Lazarus. And the only way that they have contact with civilization is Lee, maybe I'm assuming once a week or once every 2 weeks, she goes into town to get supplies. She has a mask on. She has yellow slicker on. So you're assuming everything is infested, and she's, whenever she comes back home with the supplies, they have to hose her down and burn the gloves and all that stuff. So it's sort of a post-apocalyptic thriller, possibly. You don't know. This movie is only around 86 minutes. It's written and directed by Alec Tabaldi. Now, this beautiful area of Lazarus out in the middle of nowhere, this cabin home, they've been living there peacefully for about 10 years. And what happens is there is a stranger who actually happens to go around their area, and he is actually hurt. He is bleeding from, I guess, his stomach rib area, and they nurse him back to health. The problem is this injured man good or is he bad? Is he neutral? Will he just mess up the equation of the three women living in Lazarus? That is the premise of the movie. I really loved this movie. I really enjoyed the drama. I forgot how good Ashley Judd is. I probably don't even know how good Ashley Judd is because Bruce and Eric have been talking and singing the praises of Bug, directed by late great filmmaker William Friedkin. They've been singing the praises of Bug for years. I still haven't seen it. I love Ashley Judd as an actress. I've seen her in What, Kiss the Girls, Double Jeopardy. I love those kind of thrillers. Possibly I'll love Eric's previous thriller that he mentioned as well, but she's fantastic. Ashley Judd is fantastic in Lazarus, as is Katie Douglas and Sarah Pidgeon as her nieces. And the, I don't want to say too much about the stranger and what he's about, but it's a very solid, well-done film, well-acted, and it's written and directed by Alec Tabaldi. This is one of those movies that if you see it in theaters, it's worth, if you like beautiful nature vistas, like The Dry 2, Worst of Nature, The Dry 2, and especially Lazarus, you can watch it in theaters because it's a good, solid drama, 86 minutes. I'm going to give it 4 stars just because I forgot how great Ashley Judd is. She's a natural in this. And I really love the theme of, I don't want to say too much about this thing. You think it's going to be a post-apocalyptic thriller, but it's also about how you decide to raise your family in a time of distress. What things, what do you do? What are the lengths you're going to go through, at whether you are the aunt or you're the daughters or you're the stranger. So some really good stuff for Lazarus. I wish either Bruce and Eric were able to see this movie, but again, we've been covering so many things, but I'm glad I was able to talk about Lazarus again in theaters
So,
on demand, May 10th. Yes, Eric, come in.
Greg, cut the crap. What the listeners want to know is, in Ashley Judd's oeuvre, how does this stack up to Dolphin Tale 2?
Okay, first of all, Eric, I take umbrage to what you just said right now, because when you tell me to cut the crap, again, that's baked into the podcast. That's all I do is I cut it, I slice it, I make it into little nice sushi roll morsels. But into her oeuvre, I can't say because I haven't seen Bug, but I think it's top tier Judd. I really feel it is top tier Ashley Judd stuff. So loved it. Very good question, Eric Holmes. Who knows? Maybe down the road when it hits streaming or whatnot, Bruce and Eric will catch up on Lazarus. Again, here's the thing. It's only 86 minutes, so what if maybe give it a shot? It's a good, ultimately, it's a really good drama. The ending is good. Oh, couple things. Cinematics Patreon members, I talked to Alec Tabaldi about the end of Lazarus. That spoiler ending will be available for our Cinematics Patreon members this week. I've been promising our Patreon members that we have so much stuff to do that I'm so behind on this that stuff. But the Lazarus stuff will be here this week. Also, just as, if not even more important, will be our spoiler discussion of The Last Stop in Yuma County, which will be available for our Cinematics Patreon members. All these spoilers will be available on Patreon early access this week, and then eventually we will release these spoilers down the road. Again, we're like 2.5, 3 months into spoiler stuff that we do every week, sometimes every other week. I have not uploaded them into our Cinematics YouTube channel yet. I've just have so many videos to upload. So when I say early access to you Patreon members, you really get early access. I mean, it's like by the time everyone else, the public gets it, it's probably several years down the road. So anyways, early access to both Last Stop in Yuma County this week, as well as Lazarus. Again, my rating is 4 stars on Lazarus. That is it for our featured reviews. I wish Bruce Perky would start making sense. Unfortunately, he's decided to stop making sense with his latest movie recommendation. Bruce Perky, take it away.
Yeah, so 40 years late, finally got around to watching Stop Making Sense, noted by many as one of the greatest concert films of all time, directed by Jonathan Demme. I was always a I mean, like everybody, I know quite a few, not everybody, but everybody our age group, I guess, knows quite a few Talking Heads songs. And I always thought Talking Heads were pretty cool, but I never really went either way on them. I thought, yeah, they're fine. But this movie, I guess, got re-released last year by A24 in the theater, which is kind of cool. And I think they're releasing it as a probably a 4K or something. I'm sure that, you know, a nice beautiful new release. It just dropped on Max a couple days ago, and I thought, well, 40 years late, I guess this is my opportunity to watch Stop Making Sense. As I said quickly on Cinematics, yeah, this is a really good movie. I mean, no surprise, Jonathan Demme, great director, has done obviously some classic movies. But for anyone who hasn't watched this movie, or even younger people who have no reason, like, why should I watch a concert
Sure.
film
Yeah.
about this old group, the Talking Heads? There is something about, okay, the same thing happens with, sometimes you can't capture live performances on studio albums. That's a known thing, right? You can't get that energy. With live concerts, you tend to think you're going to capture the energy. But this one, boy, oh boy, does it capture lightning in a bottle. There is something really spectacular about the way that it's shot. Also, just the progression of the concert itself surprised me. I mean, I've seen the footage in the past of the giant suit. It's really famous that, you know,
Of course,
David
yeah.
Byrne's wearing this giant suit, and you know, you
Iconic.
hear the songs. Yeah, I was surprised how it started, because it starts with him. If you've never seen the movie, I'm guessing probably both of you have, or maybe you haven't.
I have not.
It starts with him walking out on a bare stage, like the backdrop's gone, everything's gone, just ladders behind him, people are in the audience. Bare stage, lights up. He's just wearing, you know, wearing what he's wearing. He's not wearing that suit. That doesn't happen till way later. He comes out with a boombox. He sets it on the ground. He has an acoustic guitar. He starts the boombox that gets the beat going, and he stands there alone and plays an impeccable version of Psycho Killer.
Whoa.
And then the second song starts, and out walks Tina Weymouth, just playing bass in him. And each song, they add a person. And then after three or four songs, they finally drop the backdrop. So it's kind of this slow progression. And all of a sudden, it's like we talk about this a lot too, cooking the frog. Essentially, you're, as an audience member, you're being cooked by this concert film. So that all of a sudden, it's fully engulfed. The stage is full of all different musicians. Things are happening behind you. There's, you know, things being projected. And you're like, how did we get here? We started out with nothing, just a person, a guitar, and a boombox. And it's one concert. This is the whole concert is progressing this way. It's fantastic. The other thing that struck me about this, and I would just say, just go watch it. It's amazing. The other thing that struck me about it was, other than just their incredible musicianship, because they're just playing some incredible, intricate, awesome, energetic stuff. I feel like David Byrne must have lost 20 pounds every time he performed, because they're just jumping and running in place and moving the whole time. I never struck me how danceable and how groovy the Talking Heads are. Like, it just never struck me. I don't know why. But when you watch this, you're like, oh my God, they are incredibly groovy and funky and like danceable. It's just,
I
it's
mean,
weird to think of that.
because it's Byrne, you're thinking cerebral. You're
Yeah.
thinking the music's gonna be cerebral, but it's like you said, it's a lot more than that, right? So.
But see, it struck me because his start was in CBGBs. You know, he was on the same stages as the Ramones and the Dead Boys and Blondie and all those beginning punk and punk adjacent acts. And when you think of it that way, he's a true weirdo and he's a true musical genius. So it does kind of make sense. You know, he's just really on his own wavelength, and you get to see it in full display here. I think it's fantastic, and I would say put it on, watch it, and you'll get sucked into it.
And it doesn't matter if you are a fan of the Talking Heads or not, right? Just as a
Yeah.
documentary, it
Yeah,
works.
I wasn't like dislike their music, but I didn't like love it. This makes me love it. This makes me want to go out and buy their album. So it's pretty great.
Wow, that is high recommendation. I'm assuming that's what's that rating?
Oh, this is 5 stars.
Oh, 5 stars. Stop Making Sense, directed by Jonathan Demme, concert of the Talking Heads. Rotten Tomatoes. Okay, Rotten Tomatoes. I'm going to invoke that website. 70 reviews from critics, 100%, over 5,000 ratings from cinephiles, 97%, 97%,
Yeah.
high as can be. So stop making sense. Very
It's
cool.
fantastic. And it just on the pure level of shooting a concert film, it's not precious. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, we're gonna have cameras, we're gonna get in there, we're gonna see what happens, we're gonna show you what happens, it's gonna sound great. And if people have cameras in the scene, we don't care. If people have lights in the scene, we don't care. we're shooting a performance and you're going to enjoy it. And that's the way it works. It's awesome.
Okay, again, five stars for Stop Making Sense. Before we close our show with the box pick of The Lost Boys, it's going to be reviewed by Bruce Berkey and Eric Holmes. I have a specific message for Eric Holmes because I just got this in my email. Quiver Distribution will release the action sci-fi film Agent Recon on demand and on digital June 23rd, 2024. So written and directed and stars Derek Ting with Mark Singer and Chuck Norris. A covert military task force tracks a mysterious energy disturbance at a secret base in New Mexico that is suspected of experimenting
on aliens. Warn me when you start talking about this stuff. I'm wearing sweatpants and the kids are outside.
Suspected of experimenting on alien technology. Available for interviews is writer-director star Derek Ting, and no disrespect to Derek Ting. Also available for interviews is Mark Singer of V and the Beastmaster. Just wanted to throw that out there, Eric Holmes. I will make sure. I'm sure you probably will be getting.
Here you go, lay down.
just FYI. So,
dude, I'm going to Chris Farley the crap out of that interview. Remember this part in Beastmaster?
I just cannot wait till Eric Holmes gets
those
to interview.
Things that like hug people and turn them into liquid. Like, were you afraid that they were going to turn you into bones too?
That's so amazing.
Dumbass, it was a movie. Jesus.
We'll see. I can't wait for that interview. And look, by then, Eric, I will have watched The Beastmaster. I still haven't seen The Beastmaster, for Pete's sake.
They did a watch along on the if you're on the wait, the film
what
ball
year?
Patreon.
What year is Beastmaster?
Yeah, 1982.
Dang it. I was hoping it was 81. I was going to say, we have our movie.
Well, they did a watch along on the film vault. Oh, that'd be very interesting. I wonder what Bald Brian and Anderson thought of The Beastmaster would be.
Well, Anderson loves it.
I know. Yeah, Anderson loves it. I think Brian was less enthused.
Okay. Now, let's get to our box pick of the week. It is The Lost Boys. That's along with The Beastmaster. Here's another movie that I haven't seen, and I apologize to both of you guys for not watching The Lost Boys. Bruce Berkey, take it away.
Yeah, Joel Schumacher in 1987. I don't remember how this got in the box. Someone put it in the box and I already forgot who it was. And I apologize. Listen to the last episode. I think I'd said there. Or maybe I have my strip of paper still. Hang on. Hold everything. Hold it. Hold it.
Hold the phone.
It was from Nikki Whalen from Flood. The Flood. Okay.
Yes.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you to myself, I guess. I don't know. Anyway.
Great alligator movie, by the way.
I'm losing my mind.
I don't care what anyone says.
But I think The Flood just dropped on one of the streaming services just recently.
I'll check
it out. Anyway, I have, of course, seen The Lost Boys before. And I was never like super enthused by The Lost Boys, probably because I was too cool for school by then. This is 87. At this point, I'm watching David Lynch and all kinds of weirdo movies.
Jim Jarmusch.
Probably Jarmusch. I'm sure I've been watching some crazy Japanese mechanical. What was that movie? Oh, it doesn't matter. Anyway, this movie, I think certain movies that have that super 80 cheese appeal age well, you know, like they age to a point where you know what you're getting and you enjoy it more because it has that nostalgia and that you just know you're getting a huge cheeseburger when you go into this movie. And for anyone who doesn't know about this movie, I don't know who that would be. Obviously, you have both of the Coreys. I think they met on this. You have Kiefer Sutherland as the head bad vampire. You've got, bad, a.k.a. bad. He's
not head
hot.
Vampire, but definitely the leader of that group.
Oh, yeah, I see your point. Shh, you're going to spoil it, man.
I do want to talk a bit about that when we get to the end of this, but
Alex Winter, of course, in this before, I think this is before or right about the time of Bill and Ted. I think it might be before a little bit. I don't remember. What am I missing? Who am I missing?
Was Jason Patrick wasn't in it, right?
Jason Patrick. Yep. Yeah. And Jamie Gertz looking beautiful in this movie. Probably the most beautiful she's ever looked, I think. Anyway, so family moves into town. Santa, it's what it's supposed to be. It's Santa Carla taking the place of, what is the town that this is actually based on? Santa Cruz or...
Maybe what I'm thinking, Santa Cruz or Santa Clarita, one of those things. Probably,
yeah. I know it's known to be an area. Anyway, they go in there and it's got all the 80s tropes. And very quickly, they discover that by night, the hair metal band, aka a bunch of lost boy vampires, riding motorcycles and snatching unsuspecting humans and feasting upon them. And very quickly, Jason Patrick's character's little brother is made to suspect that his older brother has gone in with these vampires and is becoming a vampire, and thus ensues lots of vampire shenanigans. I mean, the thing that might surprise you if you never watched it or if you're looking back on it is it's much gorier than they would make this movie nowadays. The last third of this movie, which is essentially the vampires attacking them and them having to fight them off and try to kill them, it has some great 80s practical effects and stuff. And for anyone who loves this movie, they already know all the stuff I'm saying. I'm just saying, if you kind of were like me and you kind of was like, eh, it was fine, whatever, is this one of those teen horror movies from the 80s, go back and check it out. It's so much fun. I didn't even mention Diane Wiest is in this too.
Yeah.
She's fantastic as a mom too. It's just great, great casting. It has that sheen, that 80s sheen of like a studio production. It's a lot of fun.
And it has that seminal song classic, Cry Little Sister. Right?
Cry Little Sister is played many times in this movie. And it's got the sexy sax man, of course, is very famous in this as well. He's out there doing his thing. It's a lot.
So I want to point out a couple of things. I do run karaoke a couple times a week. And at one place I work at, Toki, there's a guy, Kev, comes in, does People Are Strange. So what's weird is like you get people coming in to do the songs and they do it like, you know, they're regular songs. And so I get their version of the song stuck in my head, and I usually like their versions better. So then when I hear other versions of that, it's like, this is weird, but it's not Kim. And then another guy at the Hatch cover, Alex, does Cry Little Sister once in a while and nails it.
Oh, very
cool. Oh yeah, but both of them are great singers, so it's all whenever I get to see them sing, is I get all excited. But one thing, first of all, a couple things. One, Lost Boys, awesome. And on a rewatch, I'm like, I kind of wish, I don't necessarily need to see a Lost Boys remake, but I want another vampire movie kind of in that style. If that makes sense, like go back to the old 80s way, shoot on film, old 80s kind of lighting, and then kind of have a similar kind of story. Second thing, I did not rewatch Lost Boys the Tribe or Lost Boys the Thirst, but I did see both those. Lost Boys the Tribe, I was excited for that because that's back when they were doing directed DVD movies and they're actually really good.
Yeah.
And so people were like, oh, it's directed DVD, it's not going to be any good. I'm like, oh, just you wait till the Tribe comes out, it's going to prove you wrong. And they came out and it wasn't good. But the Lost Boys the Thirst came out, and I'm like, oh, it's kind of burn on the Tribe, but I still got hope. And Lost Boys the Thirst came out, and I really liked that one too. So it's been a while since I've seen both of those, so kind of tread carefully. But if you want to go for any of the sequels, I'd probably go for The Thirst and might avoid The Tribe. But just a little something. Oh, and then so real quick about the spoiler that's not a spoiler. I remember watching this when I was a kid, and when that head vampire comes out, I'm like, no way.
Yeah.
And I watched it recently. I'm like, oh, they just beat you over the head on who that was.
They really do. But I mean, that is your response as a little kid is probably exactly the response they wanted. Because this is like right in between. Like it's trying to get the tween like drive-in audience almost on this one. It's, you know, that's a job at it.
I mean, I don't know if we should say, but I mean, I definitely had like one sort of thought. There's like, oh yeah, just that's the guy. Just do him. And then when it was this, the other person, it was like, but yeah, there's definitely like a lot of cheese in this, but it's still fun. And I just love the look of it. Like, I don't know. Joel Schumacher's got his kind of gritty take. It's kind of like a Fincher light, but I still kind of dig it.
Okay, the Lost Boys ratings, Eric Holmes.
Oh, geez. What do you do with this one? I mean, this would probably have to be 3-star banger too, because I think for some people, this is like just an undeniable classic. For other people, it's a cheesy relic of the 80s. So it's kind of depends on what your thoughts on these sort of things are. So yeah, I'll do 3-star banger on this one.
What about you, Roos?
I'll probably just go solid 4 stars.
Okay. Solid 4.
I think this is a good time. This is one of those movies, if it's on Like, we don't do this anymore. But if TV actually were on and it was live, I would just keep watching it if it came on and I came past it. So that's a good test for it.
I've since updated it to if I go downstairs and my brother or sister's watching it, then I'll just stick with it.
You'll sit down and join them. Yeah, there you go.
Okay,
Perfect.
three-star banger from Eric Holmes, The Lost Boys, and of course, Bruce Berkey. Even if it's a little bit the 80s, I think Bruce, you and I grew up in the 80s. He gave it 4 stars. So, directed, I believe, by Joel Schumacher. So, very interesting stuff. Bruce, what do you have in the box for 2 weeks from now? By the way, Bruce Berkey and Eric Holmes, they will do the mini Cinemax episode 242 next week. I will be out of town. Thank you guys for covering that. But what is your box pick for 2 weeks, in 2 weeks?
So, suggested by Brian O'Connell, it's a 1968 movie called How to Save a Marriage and Ruin Your Life.
Brian O'Connell, How to Save a Marriage and Ruin Your Life. Thank you, Brian O'Connell. He has been one of the first Cinematics fans. He was probably Cinematics Facebook group member number 5 or number 6. So we
I
love
know.
you, Brian O'Connell.
Do
His
you know who
favorite
was
movie.
member number one?
No, maybe, who was number one? I have no idea, Bruce.
Me.
Oh, you were?
I
Okay.
think
Number one.
go back and look. I think I might have put the very first post. I don't remember what it was, but I
That
think I
is.
put something.
That is amazing. Again, join our Cinematics Facebook group if you want some daily movie conversation, movie recommendations. Cinematics Patreon is a $5 catch-all per month. Thank you guys for your support listening to this podcast. Also, we're trying to get to 1,000 subs on our Cinematics YouTube channel. You're going to see the YouTube version. A lot of it is the audio. If you want to check out our audio podcast on YouTube, you can just find us on Cinematics at YouTube channel, as well as Eric Holmes's just tons of interviews from Eric Holmes. I'm probably about 5 or 6 interviews behind as far as uploading stuff. So we are
And I just
definitely,
sent you two more today, so.
yeah, Eric's been working really hard. So some of those interviews pop up on our weekly audio feeds, but most of them, if you don't catch them on our audio feeds, you're going to find Eric in full form, video form with the talent on our Cinematics YouTube channel. Final thoughts, Eric Holmes.
Well, you know what? I think I'll push this till next week and we'll talk more
Sure.
about it. But I did want to bring it up now.
Sure.
Kyle McFadden, he's on the
Right.
Cinematics page. He has a short called Iris. I believe we covered it a long time ago on Finder Film,
Love that short.
but
Yes.
it's out now. You can watch it on YouTube, and I put the link in the show notes, so
Okay, cool.
maybe I'll make it there. But we'll talk about, because we already covered it, but I think it's worth covering again because it's been a while. And Kyle, we saw this, and I cannot remember the name of the other short, but him on the
Yes.
short talking about that, and that one was really, he's just a great filmmaker, and hopefully one of his shorts kind of takes hold and he gets to do like a feature length, because he's kind of, I'd put him up there with like the Blue Ruin, like Jeremy Saulnier, or
Okay.
those kind of filmmakers.
Oh,
So,
wow. Wow. That's high praise.
hopefully it does well.
Okay. High praise. Very good. Eric Holmes, final thoughts. Bruce Berkey.
Not movie related, but I just want to say farewell. We lost a great one today, and Steve Albini
Oh, yeah.
passed away apparently today. And if you don't know who Steve Albini was,
Hey,
great
boy.
musician. He was
Shellac.
in Big Black, Shellac, and a bunch of other stuff, and really well known also for the average person, probably most well known for engineering In Utero, but he also did Pixies, and he did, oh my gosh, PJ Harvey, a whole bunch of fantastic records, especially from the 90s, I would say, as far as engineering. He did a ton of stuff in the 90s. So yeah, very young to be gone already. And if you haven't encountered Steve Albini's work, go out and check it out, and you have a lot of great music to discover.
I'm glad you brought that up, because you kind of grew up in that era and area. Like, did you ever run across him, or did you know him at all?
I did not, and I was really sad because I missed the last show Big Black ever played. They played in this like industrial factory in Seattle. Like, that was, and it was known to be their last show when they did it. Like, everyone knew it. And for, I don't remember why, but I wasn't able to go to it. And I know some of my friends did, and it was just an epic thing. But he was on my radar really early. I remember getting the 12-inch of Racer X. I don't know if you know much Big Black. Big Black always had the reputation as kind of, they're almost like proto-industrial, like if you listen to early Big Black, that's before Nine Inch Nails and all those bands, and it had a pretty big impact, I think, on a lot of that sound. But yeah, I never met him. I wish I would have, but he was awesome.
Okay, so listen to more of his work. That is very good words from me, Bruce Berkey. I don't know what else to say. We will see you here next week on Cinematics. And yes, of course, here's Ben.
Goodbye, everybody. Thank you for joining Cinematics.